What the epistle lesson is? What is the epistle for? It's probably got the E word in there too. Mighty Metter. Oh, it's on. Well, the gospel is Luke 17. This is, I think, is for the third last Sunday in the church year. Is that right? And Luke is a little different than Matthew and Mark in that. He has sort of three eschatological speeches or sections, whereas Matthew and Mark sort of condense this material, similar material at least, into one spot, Matthew 24 and 25 and Mark 13. But Luke has some in 12 and then in 21. But now here chapter 17, the occasion for this teaching of Jesus is verse 20. Which is where the assigned text begins. We'll just kind of start there. And I was going to say, this really is a good text that affords a look at the way St. Luke's Gospel really emphasizes present realization of the kingdom of God. So, the inauguration of the reign of heaven. And yet still retains a strong future expectation of the parousia, or the second coming. So verse 20, epirotethes is the aorist participle passive from epirotao. And I suppose the referent here would be Jesus, the unexpressed subject of he answered them later on in the verse. So if you take this temporally, it works pretty well, or maybe even causally, because he had been asked. And then de is just the post-positive particle. Then hippa plus the genitive, hippa ton pharisaion, pharisaion, expresses the personal agency, people who are doing the asking of the passive participle. Because he'd been asked by the Pharisees, and here's the content of their question, pata erchetai he basileia tu theou, when is the kingdom of God coming? Ap ekrithe, he answered, from apokrinomai, deponent, so even though this is an aorist passive form, it has an active meaning. He answered to them and said, here's what he said, uk erkatahe basileia tu theou meta paratere zeos, the kingdom or the reign of God is not coming. And you might even give this sort of a future oomph to it, will not come. Or maybe just does not come, then meta para tere zeos, with observation. And the commentators all take this, and I think they're right, to mean something like, in a way that can be observed. That is, signs and wonders, right? You're barking up the wrong tree here, okay? Neither, verse 21, ude erusin, neither will they say, erusin is the present and future indicative active, third person plural from Lego. If you remember your principal parts, it goes Lego, ero, apon. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to this at all. So neither will they say, behold here, idu, hoda, behold here, or there. For behold, the reign of God, entos himon estin. Now, this is quite a crux interpretum, and the New Age movement loves this verse because they want to translate the kingdom of God is within you, as in inside of you, right? So you search for the God within, you identify the Baal within and worship that God, and everything's groovy, as they used to say, back before some of you were born, probably. I think I was looking at Joe Fitzmyer's commentary on Luke, that entos here in the sense of within as among, okay? And this means that it's a reference to Jesus himself, that you're barking up the wrong tree. You're looking for the kingdom of God out here. The kingdom of God is right within the limits of who you are. It's right here within you, in the sense of among you, namely, I have inaugurated the reign of God, see? So don't be looking out in the future for a coming of the kingdom. You got to identify this coming of the kingdom first. Okay, and I think that's supported by other things in Luke, especially in Luke 9 and 10, where he said in Luke 10 he sends out the he sends out the 70 or the 72, however you take the textual variant, to every place where he himself was going to come, it says. And their message, the reign of heaven is at hand. The point, the reign of heaven is drawing near because Jesus is drawing near. Right? So he brings the powerful reign and rule of God. So this is eschatology, but it's realized eschatology. It's the, to use, again, George Ladd's great phrase, it's the presence of the future. And unless you get this part, you know, unless you realize what's going on now in terms of the reign of God being manifested, you will in no way be ready or prepared to receive it when it finally comes with power on the last day. So he begins by correcting the Pharisees, right? But then in verse 22, he turns to his disciples. So in a sense, if you're going to preach this text, you have to pay attention, as always in Luke, especially in this middle travel narrative, as to whom is he speaking, right? So verse 22, he turns and says to the disciples. Luke specifically notes that. Verse 22, Eleusantai, a future indicative middle deponent from Erchomai. The days will come when epithymezeta, when you will long or desire for, then mion, one of the days of the Son of Man to see, idain, kai uk upsista, and you will not see. So back up and try it again. The days will come when you will long to see, in a sense, even one of the days of the Son of Man, and you will not see them. Now, what does this mean, one of the days of the Son of Man? I think the best guess is that there is some evidence that a phrase around in the first century was the days of the Messiah, which meant the Messianic age. Okay, so to say, there are days will coming when you'll be longing to see, you disciples will be longing to see the consummation of the kingdom of heaven, even one of those days, but you won't see them because trouble's up ahead. Now Jesus, in turning to the disciples, is beginning to exhort them, well, not exhort exactly, but to warn them about misplaced eschatological expectation, right? And about the fact that it's going to be tough up ahead and they're not going to see the consummation of the age, at least not for a while. So you'll long to see one of those days and you will not see them. Now, here's another thing that will characterize that period of longing to see even one of those days. Verse 23, here we have Eruzin again, and they will say to you, idu eke, idu hoda. I mean, we've had this in reverse order up in verse 20. Verse 20, they will say, behold there, or behold here. And the sense is, here's the Messiah. Here's the Christ. He's come back, right? He's over there in the desert. He's out there in the city, wherever it happens to be. In reaction to that, a double prohibition, using me plus aorist subjunctive, which is a normal way of doing it, me ap eltheta, me de dioxeta. Do not go out in response to them saying, behold here or there, nor do not, now this is interesting because dioko, it occurs more often, it means to persecute, right? But it means to run after. Sort of like the verb in the Psalm 23, is it, I can't remember, is it radaf, I think, means to pursue. Surely goodness and righteousness will pursue me all the days of my life. Is that, did I do okay? Good. Behold here, behold there. No, one of the days. Here he is. So don't. Yeah, Paul. Paul is coming. Yeah, but he's going to be late. Yeah. Paul Schreiber. Yeah. In fact, if he's riding his bike, he might be very late. Because it's raining. Oh, we get the verb to rain here later on this text. How appropriate. So do not go out and do not run after them. Do not dioko, right? Because you won't need any warning. You won't need anybody telling you, behold, he is here or there. Verse 24, for just as the lightning, now we have astroptus. This is kind of difficult. It's elliptical. Verse 24 is a little bit awkward. For the lightning, now we have a predicate position participle. If you checked out the variant reading there, a lot of manuscripts wanted to add a definite article in between astrape and astraptusa to make it easier, but it's probably not to be read. For just as the lightning, after it flashes, after it does what lightning does, now here comes the difficult part, ektes hippaton uranon. There's a word missing. And there's furthermore, there's a word missing from the next prepositional phrase, ektein hip uranon. And then finally the verb lampe, to light or to shine. And what you have to supply is a feminine genitive singular noun of some sort to match up with these two definite articles, ektes m and estein m. Because the way it reads now, it's, for just as lightning after it flashes, out of the under heaven, into the under heaven. And so you have to supply something like, the guess that I found in the grammar, Blas de Brunner offers, meridus, which is the genitive of meris, which means part. So they suggest that you read, out of, from the part under heaven until the part under heaven, which means idiomatically, from one corner of the creation to the other. So ek this, ace this. So the sense is clear enough, but there's simply a word missing, and you can see text critically it's kind of a mess in spots. But again, the sense is clear, so let's back up and try it again. For just as the lightning after it flashes shines, lampe, from one part of the things under the heaven until the other part of the things under the heaven, houtos estai, thus will be, thus the Son of Man will be in his day, en te hemera autu. Now the point is, when we get this around here, I lived in Western Oregon for a long time, probably went 3 years at a time without seeing lightning, okay? But not so in Missouri. I mean, it's part of the unique curse that God has laid upon the Midwest. I mean, you know, Rev Rossow's house was struck by lightning about 2 years ago, right across the street from us. Nobody had to call me up and say, you know, lightning just struck. They didn't have to do that. It was obvious. I mean, I knew it. And that's what the Son of Man's coming will be in his day. And this is a reference to the parousia. So you don't have to go running out looking for signs, right? In a sense, you don't have to worry about whether or not you'll know that it's happening, because it'll be just as manifest as these huge bolts of Judean lightning, you know, that flash from one side of the sky to the other. And I was in Arizona one time, and I actually saw lightning go all the way across the horizon. I mean, it was at night, and there was this desert lightning. And it actually did that. I mean, it started way over here, and it went like this, now, horizontally. It went, right? And I fell to my knees and said, I will become a monk, right? And then God said, I don't want you. So instead I became a Lutheran. That's what it'll be like on that day. But, verse 25, first it is necessary. Now we've got auton, which is the logical subject of these infinitives that are coming up, that he, and the referent here is the antecedent, is Son of Man. But first it is necessary that he, many things, pala, pathein, suffer, and that he, apo dokimasthenai, be rejected by this generation. Right? So, it's interesting. It's like, okay, there's one important event that has to happen in between then and now, in between now, Jesus is talking, and the parousia. Before that can happen, this must happen. The Son of Man has to complete his present manifestation of the kingdom of God. Right? First that has to happen. And then he switches back to talking about the parousia. Verse 26. Another comparison, this time with the days of Noah. And just as it happened in the days of Noah, that's pretty straightforward, kathos agenata entais hemerais Noah, so also will be in the days of the Son of Man. Now, here's what was going on in the days of Noah, verse 27. All these imperfects. It's like business as usual. They typically ate. They typically drank. They typically married. they typically were given in marriage. Until which day, a little awkward there, but the sense is clear enough, until the day which Noah, Ace Elthan, entered into the ark, Kibbutzon, and the cataclysm came and destroyed everyone. So the point here is that, not that it's interesting, in the Old Testament, of course, the generation of Noah is a wicked generation, and that's part of the oomph there. And in Jewish literature, typically in the intertestamental period, the generation of Noah would be held up as an example of unbelievable corruption, right? But here, Jesus isn't using it in that way. He's simply saying, look, life's normal, right? They ate, they drank, they married, they were given in marriage, right up until the day when Noah entered into the ark, okay? In other words, no warning, right? Business as usual, right up until the time when Noah enters into the ark and the flood, the cataclysm, wiped them out. So also, likewise, just as, verse 28, hamoios, kathos, likewise, so also, egeneta, it was in the days of Lot. Here's a good, you know, sometimes you hit Greek words and you can translate them right away. Lot. Right, it doesn't mean Elijah, right? Yeah, in the days of Lot. Furthermore, sometimes they don't decline, so you don't have to worry about what the genitive form of Lot is. It's just Lot. See, some things are easy. Now, what's the pattern? Once again, they were eating, they were drinking, they were buying, agorazoing. And again, all these imperfects, these habitual, typical behaviors. They were selling, poleo means to sell. They were planting, ephuteon, and they were building. I mean, right until the day when the fire and the brimstone came down, they were applying for building permits, right? Then verse 29, but on which day Lot went out from Sodom, fire, pyrkaitheon. I had to look that one up. I thought it looked like the adjective theos, which means divine, but it's the word for sulfur, okay? So fire and sulfur, ebrexend, and the verb brecho, which is a good verb to pronounce when you have a cold, means to rain, as in what it's doing today. We have water raining down, but they had fire and sulfur rained from heaven and apolymied them. It destroyed all things, all people. Okay. Now, here's the punchline of verse 30, and the text stops here. It could very well carry on to verse 37 without the meaning being affected much at all. Excuse me. According to the same things, katata auta, or idiomatically, in the same way, will be, estai, it will be on which day, at which day, hemera, the Son of Man is revealed. Okay? So, don't get all hot. I mean, the message of this text is, don't get all hot and bothered about predicting when it's going to happen. And don't worry as to whether or not you'll know when it happens. Okay? And certainly don't go running out when people say, idu hoda, or idu ike, right? Behold here or there. Because it's going to be patently obvious. It'll be just like the days of Noah. No warning, and then bingo. You didn't have, I mean, everybody knew that something big was happening when the fountains of the deep opened up and the waters spewed forth and so forth and so on. Same way with the days of Lot. Normal business as usual, and then bam, it comes. Okay. And these are interesting texts to put into our mix because while there is some biblical information that talks about the time being worsened, you know, and in the latter days people will become lovers of self and haters of parents and abusers of professors and things like that. That was, what, no laughter? Gosh, darn, heck, that must be a sign of the end. This text emphasizes that it's business as usual, right? So, theologically, be focused on the reign of God, which has already been manifested in Jesus, right? And be vigilant and prepared for the end. But don't go out running out after it. Don't get all hot and bothered about trying to predict when it's going to happen. Because it's going to be sudden and it's going to be obvious and nobody's going to have to tell you when. Right? So, That's the end of the text. Pretty straightforward. It's nice to find an eschatological paragraph that's fairly straightforward. Sometimes this stuff is impenetrable. Questions? Pretty docile group. What, you got finals coming up or something? I'm done early. You want to keep reading? Andy, you want to take over? Okay, I don't know how long the Old Testament reading is. Yeah, Matt.
Verse 22.
Yes. Yeah. That's why it's not a question of, is Jesus' ministry eschatological, or is the last day the reference, but it's a both, very much a both. Yeah, right. Yeah. Not for his faithful, but See, I think the payoff here, interestingly enough, it's something as pedantic or ordinary as this, but I think in some ways also it's a new perspective, and that is, what kind of salvation is effected already now when a person becomes a disciple of Jesus? You know, faith, baptism, you know, what kind of salvation is given already now? And one of the answers that rings throughout the synoptics is a salvation that will avail on the last day. That kind of salvation. See? So, he who hears my words, this is Matthew now, but he who hears my words and does them, right, is like a man who builds his house on a rock. Now, and when that day comes, you know, the waters rise, the rains, blah, 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 see, that house will not fall then. But see, this only makes sense, it only appeals if we're really serious about longing for the last day. And so if we sort of lose our eschatological edge, then I think we can even lose some appreciation for what it is that we already possess. We have an eschatological salvation. It will avail on the great day of God's final triumph. It will, yeah. So, okay.
Now I'm glad you're here. Because there's some funny forms in there that I haven't looked at.